the unholy trinity, right? Those aspects themselves, the carbs, the sugar, and the oils. And so just starting. Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
All right, guys. Well, our guest today is Daniel Trevor, a citizen scientist and author of the book Unholy Trinity: How Carbs, Sugar, and Oils Make Us Fat, Sick, and Addicted, and How to Escape the Grip. With a background in analyzing technical data, Daniel decided to take a deep dive into medical and nutrition science in order to reverse his cardiovascular disease after a surprising heart attack. Using his research, he wrote Unholy Trinity as a how-to book to help people turn around their health and get into the best shape of their life. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys. Mike, Corey, Beth, I really appreciate it. You know, I was reading on your website about how you had a policy years ago of never date a client. And then look what happened. You got two beautiful boys. That's awesome. I love that kind of thing. How old are your boys, by the way?
They're 9 and 6.
Oh, I have two daughters. They're older, but I had 3 years apart too. They're like 26 and 29. I'm older than you, so I'm ahead. But I got to tell you and your audience, I wish I knew half of what you guys know when I was your age. It's just, I just love what you're doing and the message you're getting out there and so forth. So big hugs right from the front.
Thank you very, very much. Well, we're really pumped to have this conversation with you. You have a fascinating story. And so I think that is probably just the best place for us to start. I mean, give everybody a little bit of an idea as to what your lifestyle was like. I mean, you suffered a heart attack, right? And we want to know the backstory behind the book.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, I almost died of a heart attack. And it was a complete shocker to me because I thought I was Mr. Healthy. I was slim and symptom-free because, you know, all these diseases, the major diseases of modern life are all silent. There's no symptoms. I mean, check out this stat. The majority of the people who die of a deadly first heart attack, their very first symptom of having heart disease is their own death. I mean, it's like wild, right? You would think there would be some clouds before the storm or something like that, but no. So that's why one of the big things in the book, in the message, is you have to test. And so my diet was, I was on a high carbohydrate diet. I didn't know, I was totally sold on this propaganda and BS of heart healthy whole grains, right? I didn't know that when you eat those, they turn into sugar in your body. And the sugar and the carbs and the oils, which we can get into, that starts this process called hyperinsulinemia, which is just a fancy sounding name for, well, it's hyper is too much insulin. And then emia means in the blood, too much insulin in the blood, hyperinsulinemia. And that's a word people should get familiar with, because what happens is we all need to get familiar with the two most basic processors and fundamental players when we eat. And those are insulin and glucose. So what happens is you eat something and your blood sugar rises. And depending on what you ate, it'll go a certain, it'll go shoot way up. And then in a natural procedure happens, the pancreas emits or secretes insulin to bring that down. That's a fine balanced process over time. But then when you're eating so much, modern man is eating 3 times a day plus snacks, 3 or 4 snacks a day. And then you get this hyperinsulinemia because you're going, hour after hour, day after day, week after week, year after year with hyperinsulinemia. And the reason why that's dangerous is because that's the match that sparks the fire of inflammation, which leads to all these modern diseases. I mean, we never had these kind of foods prior to 100 years ago. It's just crazy, So anyway, I had that. And having studied technical data throughout my life, I decided I had to take the dive into the medical and nutrition sides to find out how could this happen to Mr. Healthy. And so I did that. And what I found out really shocked and infuriated me, actually. And so, because what we've been told to eat, especially from the U.S. dietary guidelines from the last 50, 60 years, is killing us. It's killing us. And there's no education in the schools about how to, you know, what the proper human diet is and all that kind of thing, right? So that was the beginning of my journey, because I was never more highly motivated to find out how this could happen to me than then.
Let me ask you another question regarding, you know, when this occurred, when you had the heart attack, were there any other health conditions that came up for you as well? Or was it just the heart attack?
No, it was just that. And then I discovered three other things. And my doctors had missed it all. I had just passed my stress test. I have a Dr. Ford Brewer. He is this brilliant guy out of Johns Hopkins, and he's taught thousands of doctors over the years. And so he knows. I asked him to write chapter 22, which turns out to be, what are the most important blood labs and scans that anyone can get? But your doctor might say, oh, you don't need that. You don't need that. And the only reason they're telling you that you don't want it is because they wouldn't know how to interpret it anyway, because they don't learn these things. They're not taught anything about nutrition. They're not taught anything about the most important labs that you need to check to find out if you're in danger and something's lurking inside, or, you know, maybe it matches up with your genetics from that's running in your family, but you had no symptoms. And so that was me. After my heart attack, I went to Google University and YouTube University, and I found all these, you know, geniuses on the cutting edge of modern medical science and the correct science. And I found out about all these tests. So I thought, I need to get some of these so I can have a benchmark where I could measure 3 months out, 6 months out, and so forth. So I could really confirm, hey, I'm making progress, right? And so I asked Dr. Brewer to write chapter 22 in the book. And again, you have all of the most important blood labs and scans that most doctors just don't check. They're just not aware of it. And that's why they'll tell you you don't need it. Now, simple things that it's just, check this out.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of one of those bloods or one of those labs that you would recommend people getting?
Yes. Yes. In fact, it's filled with a lot of them. But chapter 7, I called it the most important health test you've never had. That's where because doctors don't order it. And what that is, it's the OGTT with insulin. That means oral glucose tolerance test with insulin. And they don't order it. And that is the most important test to find out if you've got some degree of a diabetic physiology, where you are in the diabetic spectrum. You know, because people will say, well, I might be pre-diabetic, but there's no way I'm type 2 diabetic. That was me. I did this test and it blew my mind. I thought, what? And I found that although I was on the lean side, there's about 2 or 3% of the population that, because most people think you have to be overweight or obese. No, you can be, you know, some of us can only be, you know, on the slim side. That was like Dr. Peter Attia. He was a fantastic athlete, you know, triathlons and all that, right? And he got his type 2 diabetes from drinking so much Gatorade, right? I got mine from the heart healthy whole grains, and he got his from the, so you have to get this test. Yeah, that's the most important one. And then you can go from there. But once I discover that, because the reason why that's so important is because if you have a diabetic physiology, that opens you up to all the silent diseases of modernity. That was the root cause source of my cardiovascular disease. I found out that I had this condition called fatty liver disease. It's called NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, because I don't drink, no drugs. I'm already silly enough, as my daughters will surely attest. So anyway, so I had this fatty liver disease. And the thing that you need to check on that is that doctors don't recommend. It's this thing called GGT, gamma glutamyl transferase, which is a liver enzyme. And most doctors don't check that. If they check anything, it's the ALT, ASP, ALT. And most doctors don't even check that, as Dr. Ken Burry just told me on an interview with him a couple of weeks. And so the reason why GGT is so important is because here's the deal, right? Life insurance companies, they're not so interested in medical science as they are in the bottom line. It's just business to them, right? And their number one predictor of all-cause mortality is having elevated GGT. It's like, what? How come the doctors don't know what the life insurance companies know, right? Because again, it's just business to them. They, you know, they want to know who to accept and who to reject, because they want to know who's the people that scream all-cause mortality, you know, mortality risk, because they don't want to invest in that person or persons. And then I found out this elevated GGT is also so very closely related to cardiovascular disease. And then I started piecing things together and I was like, oh my God, that's why I had that. And this type 2 diabetes that I had was also the source of my undiagnosed osteoporosis, which these days it's reaching people younger and younger. It's amazing. I found that there was a study I have a chapter on that, chapter 13. It's about osteopenia and osteoporosis. And unfortunately, it hits the ladies more than the guys, but still, it's something that all of us want to avoid. So having done all this study and research in this how-to book that I wrote, I was able to reverse all four of these things. And, you know, it first starts with observing information. It's like, you look at things like, okay, so in 1930, the obesity rate was 1%. We are now approaching 50%. That's 50x in less than 100 years. What the hell is happening? Never before in human history have human beings gotten so fat and so sick so fast. 100 years is like, what, a snap of the finger in the eons of time. And so you have to, and then when you do a data and situation analysis, a very complete one, you find out it's the unholy trinity. This is when all this started. I mean, we have the carbs, the sugar, and the oils, and wow, the oils, they weren't even in the human diet prior to 100 years ago. They were used as machinery lubricant in the Industrial Revolution. They looked at a bucket of it and they said, hey, it looks like lard. Why don't we feed it to people and make money that way? Because up until that time, cottonseed oil and so forth was considered a toxic waste from, you know, cotton farming and all that. And then canola oil, they didn't even invent that till about 50 years ago. And these are so connected to many of the modern diseases that we now have. It's just amazing. And to weight gain.
Yeah. I know Mike wants to get into some of the ins and outs, but I just have to ask, as a wife of a husband, having friends and clients that have had husbands that have had heart attacks, what was that experience like for you and your family to walk through?
Oh, it's just, you're going to have to read the introduction to my book.
I will.
I did. I mean, everybody should know. I'm going to let them know right now. We'll let them know at the end as well, though. If you go to danieltrevor.com, like, you can download the first chapter of the book, the introduction, the first chapter. I mean, and even in that, when I was reading through it, I'm like, there's so much fascinating, you know, information and things just from that alone, we can spend the time today discussing. But yeah, to answer Corey Beth's question.
Yeah, I mean, like, walk us through what that was like to go through that, especially because you're healthy. You're not someone that's like, oh, this makes sense. This didn't make sense at all for you.
Exactly. Good question. Yeah, we'll see. Most people think they have the image of, you know, the Hollywood. Oh, they grab the chest and they it's not like that at all. For most people, for me, it started with a little sensation in my neck area. Something that you'll feel at the beginning of a cold or a flu. And then I started getting these cold sweats. I'm going, wow, this is weird. So I went over to Dr. Google consult with Dr. Google. And I was reading down these long lists of heart attack symptoms and I was checking them off. No, 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 no. And I get to this one, cold sweats. I thought, okay. And at the time I had both my daughters had just gone off to college not that long ago. And I grabbed the top floor unit of this new high rise that was just across the street from one of the top cardiovascular heart hospitals in the country. Fortunately, they didn't have a trauma unit, so I never had to hear all these sirens and all that. So I got my clothes on, I grabbed my wallet, I went down to the bottom floor, walked across the street, walked in. I said, I'm having some weird experience. So they hooked me up, they took some blood. Within a short time, they found out, they checked this protein called troponin. And if it has higher levels than normal, you've had a myocardial infarction, which is the medical term for a heart attack. And then I texted my daughters and they were there in no time. And it was just a shock to me. But it's not like this big pain you get in your chest or anything like that. And by the way, women are sent home undiagnosed after they've had a heart attack 7 times more than men. And so if you have any weird symptoms, you and your gals, well, you're not going to have it at your age because you're doing, you know, you're working out, you're watching your diet, and you're not eating the deadly unholy trinity, right? But you have to get yourself there, and as inconvenient as it might be. And here's a stat too. 17% of cardiologists, only 17%, know that more women die of heart disease than men.
Wow.
It's a common misunderstanding. Most people think, oh, it's the man. Oh, he had a heart attack. Oh, that's because he's a man. No, more women die of heart disease than men. I have that in chapter 17. Or I have chapter 17, 18, and 19. It covers all the cardiovascular disease. You know, it's besides being how to get metabolically healthy again, it's also kind of an expose on big food, big pharma, and big medicine. And what are the procedures that they make the most money at, like, the, you know, in the medical industry? And listen, when I mentioned those three industries, I'm sure there's beautiful, wonderful people in all three. And I'm not talking about all of them. I'm just in certain echelon, higher echelons of these. There's a, people, they're more interested in profits over people. That's the best way I can put it, right?
We've talked many times that, you know, their main interest in terms of deciding around what to give out to the public, what to present to the public, is has everything to do with the bliss scale, right? It's like if they can make foods that are more addictive because they're higher in sugar or have more seed oils or, you know, you name it, any more salt, finding that beautiful combination of those three things, you know, food becomes more blissful and people are more likely to consume it and then get addicted to it and boom, profits through the roof.
I'm telling you, I mean, I was just telling this to Dr. Ken a couple of weeks ago that, you know, these big food companies in their conference rooms and their labs around the world, they have medical geniuses or biochemical geniuses, you know, PhDs in biochemistry. They're trying to figure out what is it that we can put into these ingredients that makes them eat more of it, right? So we can stimulate the opiate receptors in their brain so they eat the full bag instead of half the bag or that kind of thing. And it's profits over people. And, you know, it's just you have the big food and they wind up causing the reason why you're going to big medicine. And then big medicine will send you over to big pharma and around we go, round and around we go, right? It's like, oh, man, that's why in the book I call it the other unholy trinity. And again, I'm not condemning all the people in there because God bless all the, especially in the medical field, that they're saving our lives 24/7, right? I mean, they're setting the bones and suturing up the wounds and removing the bullets and steering wheels from our chests, and that kind of thing. So thank God they're there. So, but it, when it comes to disease and the silent diseases like diabetes, which leads to heart disease and fatty liver disease, I mean, that's the source of all your major diseases. Amputations from diabetic neuropathy, blindness, PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I have a whole chapter on that as well. So I took a deep dive in a lot of areas. And I even have chapter 15, I cover fatty liver disease and kidney disease. So I don't leave anybody out.
I love it.
Everybody's included.
Well, I was going to say, what I think is so amazing is you have this incredibly traumatic event happen. And there's that fight, flight, or freeze that most people go into. And I think a lot of people have something like that happen. And maybe they'll make some changes. Maybe they'll take the medicine that's being given to them or the prescription. The fact that you, maybe with your background in technical data analysis, dove into trying to figure out the cause and then share that with others. I just want to commend you. I think that that's very rare in our world today.
Well, thank you. You know who also validated me for that was, you had him on your show a few months ago, Dr. Philip Avadia.
Yes.
Cardiologist, cardiothoracic surgeons, done over 3,000 heart operations. This guy's brilliant, right? And by the way, he wrote me an amazing endorsement on my book. Anyway, so he said to me, one of the questions was, it was something like, it was a very revealing question as well as a very validating to me. And he said something like, you know, how is it that you as a non-physician were able to figure all this out when 99% of medical doctors can't or won't? I thought, oh my God, what a question. So we explored that and that kind of thing. So I don't want to get into all that, but there are reasons for that as well. You know, they work within the confines of what's called the medical standard of care. And if they work in a hospital or a clinic, they're not really advised to talk to the patient about their diet and their exercise. They're trained in medical school, which are funded by Big Pharma, to reach for the prescription pad before they consult with him about anything else. And they don't know anything about nutrition anyway. So what are they going to tell them? Check out this stat. There was a study in 2019, which is like, 10 minutes ago in the medical industry, because it takes so long to get to the front lines of the hospitals and the doctors and so forth, let alone how long it takes to get to the medical curriculum. And this study showed that 74%, was it 74? Yeah, 74% of doctors. Now we're talking general practitioners, internists, and cardiologists. 74% do not know how to properly test for prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, let alone know how to treat it. And I was on Dr. Ford Brewer's podcast a while back, and we were discussing how this is such a silent epidemic. This is bigger than what we went through the last couple few years ago, right? So it's silent. And so what they do is most of the doctors, they will check what's called the fasting blood glucose, and they'll check their A1C. And even the American Diabetes Association will tell you that if you just check those, you're going to miss 70% of the people at least who need help in the diabetic area. And so they don't check this most important one called the OGTT with insulin that I mentioned earlier, or glucose tolerance test with insulin, because that one can really tell you where you are on the diabetic spectrum. And again, why that's so important is because this is where all the silent diseases start, with some degree of diabetic physiology. And if you don't know where you are, you got to test, because I believe that if you're going through life without testing, especially after you're age 40 or you're overweight or obese, it's like driving down the road without a steering wheel and a speedometer. You will crash into something and you're going to go, oh, how could this happen to me? I didn't know. So test. And like Dr. Ford Brewer calls his chapter 22 that he wrote, don't guess, test.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
I want to get deeper into, you know, the unholy trinity, right? Those aspects themselves, the carbs, the sugar, and the oils. And so just starting with carbohydrates, let's just start there. One of the things that you brought up in that introduction that everybody can go on your site and read, which I thought was brilliant, was this discussion around gluten-free. And we have this belief that, well, what I have to do is I just have to cut gluten out. And if I just cut gluten out, then that's one step in the right direction. So why don't you just, you know, tell everybody why gluten-free is not really a free pass for any of us.
I know exactly what you're talking about in chapter one, because I take the people, the reader, through the history of how we got here. And part of it is what they do is they may remove wheat and grains from some of these gluten-free foods, but they add in these four ingredients. Well, first of all, you got to know this particular fact. Wheat raises blood glucose levels higher than table sugar, even higher than a Snickers bar. People don't know that, you know, so it's like, what? And I had that. I was big on the grains and the wheat and the whole grain bread with my low-fat turkey sandwich. And low-fat is a bunch of BS anyway. And so they remove all the wheat and grains from these products, but they add in these four other ones. What is it? I think it's potato flour, rice flour, cornstarch, and tapioca starch. And those are the only four things that raise the blood sugar higher than wheat at a Snickers bar.
Wow.
Those four. And that's what you find out in these when you go to buy, oh, I'm going to get a pizza that has cauliflower crust. They may take the wheat and the grains out, but they put these four ingredients in. It's deadly. So you got to read all your ingredients and be sure about all that. And so, you know, that's why I like to take the reader through the whole history of how we got here, because it all started in the 50s and 60s, this whole low-fat, non-fat nonsense, because I have a lot of graphs and images and pictures and so forth in the book to make it easier to understand for the reader. And there's this one graph that shows the rate of heart disease from 1900 to 1955. And it's like this. right around the early 50s was our president, Dwight Eisenhower. He had a heart attack. It was freaking people out. Men were being taken in the prime of their life. Well, what's going on here? So this researcher named Ansel Keys came along, and he had this theory that it was the butter, meat, and cheese and all that was clogging up the arteries. And that's not how it works at all. He had this concept that, oh, it's like a shower drain where you get the hair and the soap and the grease and the gook. And it's not that way at all. So he had this fake science, which I tell all about in the book. And then that led to the whole low-fat, non-fat diets that came in the late 60s, early 70s. And then people started to eat more because when you don't have enough fats in your diet, you're not satiated, you're not satisfied, and you need to have a snack. Snacking wasn't even a thing until about 50 or 60 years ago. When I grew up, we had breakfast, we had lunch, we had dinner, we had snacks. You know, so they came up with all these snack wells, fat-free, low-fat, and all this, and all these different foods. And then you see the chart for the obesity graph, date coincident with the the U.S. dietary guidelines that was recommending all the high grains, low fat. The obesity chart was like this, right? And so I go into the whole that history. And to backtrack a little bit, what they found out was that the reason for all those heart attacks and heart disease, they later discovered in the 70s that it was due to the epidemic of smoking. I mean, everybody smoked back then. It was like, well, not everybody. It was at least half the population. And they were lighting up everywhere. You would see ads that would come on, and the doctor with his doctor white jacket, and he'd have be smoking, you know, my doctor smokes Camels, and they smoke more than, you know, they're the best on the market. And so it was so crazy. And the reason for that is, and this may sound a little technical, but it's very interesting. Smoking destroys this thing in the arteries called the glycocalyx. This is in your arteries, right? And what is that? Glycocalyx is this fuzz-like protective lining of the arteries, and it prevents these what's called small, dense LDL particles from invading and getting in there and creating plaque over time, right? And smoking destroys that because that's the first line of protection against it. The other thing that destroys it worse than smoking, carbs and sugar and the oils. And so no wonder we've got an explosion of heart disease and so on and so forth, because that's where the inflammation starts, in the arteries, and then it transfers to other places. But it all started with the epidemic of smoking. And then, over time, that kind of dwindled, and especially dwindled in 1994 when Congress brought before them the top executives of the top tobacco companies, right? Some of your audience might even remember this. They'd be like, oh, no, Mr. Congressman, we never intentionally put addictive chemical drugs in our carcinogenic drugs into our products. But in legal discovery, they found out they all knew for years, and it was like busted. And after that, the decline of smoking really occurred. I'd like to see that occur with some of the big food companies one day, you know?
I think that would be amazing. And your description there, though, of what transpired, I mean, you know, our audience knows for me hits home pretty closely because, you know, my father at 41 had his first triple bypass surgery and I was 14 years old.
Really?
And he's still alive, like God bless. But it's just interesting because he was a smoker since he was 12 years old. And the moment that happened, gave up cigarettes, never went back. Yet he proceeded to have to go and get other stents and, you know, all this other stuff over the course of years. And the attempt to get healthy because of the recommendations at the time were eat this lower fat, you know, high grain diet. And so that's what we did in our family. That's how we ate. We ate predominantly. And I remember my mom bringing in the snack wells into the house. Like, ooh, finally we could have a treat that's healthier than Oreos. And it was like, it was awesome because we could have this stuff. And then, it's only been over the last probably decade or so that finally the information has been coming out. The truth has been unveiled that, well, cholesterol was never really at the heart of the problem in the first place. And it isn't interesting that during that period from the 50s until now, you know, there was this push to let's lower cholesterol, lower cholesterol, lower cholesterol, right? Reduce saturated fat. And yet people continue to get fatter. They keep getting sicker. The rate of heart disease is the highest it's ever been. And I think it's a good segue into a conversation around cholesterol, because, you know, you've obviously done a ton of research around this as well. So, I mean, talk to us a little bit more about the role of cholesterol.
Oh, my goodness. I have a whole chapter on that. What do I call it? Chapter 5 is what you urgently need to know about cholesterol. Prior to that, let me preface it with this. This is for your dad, and this is for probably the parents. Well, you probably have younger people in your audience, but their parents need this information. There were these large studies. For example, there was this one called the ischemia trial. It was this big $100 million federally funded study, right? And it was almost 5,200 people, and they divided them into two groups. One group got invasive procedures, and the other one got lifestyle changes and medication. And when I say the invasive procedures, they either got CABG, C-A-B-G, which stands for coronary artery bypass graft, which that's just open heart surgery and bypass surgery, or PCI, which is percutaneous coronary intervention. That's just a fancy term for a stent. So the one group got open heart surgery, bypass surgery, and stents, and the other one got lifestyle changes, you know, stop eating that thing, get to the gym more, certain medications, that kind of thing. And they followed them closely and monitored them. And again, this is almost 5,200 people for 4 years. And the results were, because they wanted to find out, they wanted to basically prove that, hey, if you do these stents and the bypass surgery, that's the way to go. And they found out that there was no difference in outcomes after 4 years. And it said this trial failed to show that these invasive procedures were preferable for prevention over the other. And so, and then I asked the question in the book, do you think these invasive procedures, the CABG, you know, bypass grafts and stents, will start to come to a halt? There is so much of an enormous amount of revenue generated by these mostly unnecessary procedures, because you got to remember, 85% of the time they're done for prevention. Only 15% of the time are done for life-saving interventions. You know, the person's having a heart attack, that kind of thing. 15%, 85% are for prevention. But after this and the other trials, like the Orbita trial, the Courage trial, they had the same, they failed to prove that these things worked. And so the big headline should be CABG and stents do not prevent heart attacks. And, but you would think that there would be a diminution of the carrying out of these procedures, but no, they're being done more than ever now. If you were to knock those out, careers and entire institutions would disappear. So there's no way that the CEOs and the board of directors of hospitals and cardiology clinics are going to want to see that disappear. Because if that goes, the mountain retreat goes, and the kids in Ivy League go, and the beach house, and the, you know, all the accoutrement of what I like to think of how people can sometimes, they get to a certain level, they become owned by their possessions. And they can't do without, we can't do without the cars and the, well, you get what I'm doing.
Yeah, so, follow the money.
It's a shame. It's a shame. And again, I'm not condemning a lot of them, because they are they can be life-saving procedures. And here's another tip. If you do a stress test, your doctor might say, well, you know, I'd like to take a closer look. Because let's say you pass your stress test, because there's a lot of people, a lot of celebrities even, that have passed their stress test with flying colors, and then they go on to have a heart attack and die. That was, there was a news guy, he was on the, every Sunday morning, he had a popular show called Meet the Press, this guy named Tim Russert. And he had just passed his stress test, passed out, and died of a heart attack. Gary Shandling, this amazing comedian actor, which I used to love, passed his stress test, died of a heart attack. Alex Trebek, the game show guy, he passed his stress test, had a heart attack. He survived it, but 2 or 3 years later, he was taken by pancreatic cancer, sadly. And, you know, if you have all these celebrities that, you know, have all the best medical care that money can, but how often do you think it happens to the us lesser mortals out here, right? So it really does. So the doctor might say, yeah, I want to take a closer look. And that means he wants to take you into the cath lab. Cath is short for catheter, where they cut you open in your groin and they thread carefully this tiny cameras up into your heart area to take a look. Now, the guy that's doing that, he is like a hammer looking for a nail. You got to give him a permission in writing that if he gets in there and he thinks he wants to put a statin, he's putting a statin. And I remember there was cardiologist, what was his name? Dr. William Davis. He would say, look, we made a ton of money off doing stents. He says, I'd personally make about $2,000 each one, and we'd do 10 or 12 a day. What? And they are cranking them out like crazy in the cath labs and the hospitals and so forth. So before you do that, and the reason why you don't want to sign up for that is because, and I have all this in the book, which you can present to your doctor. And after you do, I'll give you some advice. So after you do, what happens is a stress test can only detect a problem if there's at least 50% blockage of the arteries, at least. However, the big problem with that is 70% of the heart attacks, of all heart attacks occur with less than 50% blockage. It's like, what? So how, yeah, what are we doing here, guys? The science is right there. So I give the advice in the book. I said, look, if your doctor is recommending this, this, and this, take this, show this to them. That way, first of all, they know that you know. And secondly, you might want to say, okay, tell me again why we were doing this. You know? So you really want to be an informed patient. And if anybody, any doc, kind of doctor says to you, oh, what are you doing? Consulting Dr. Google? You don't want to be with anybody that's like that anyway. You're interested in your own health. You're the CEO of your body. You have to do your own research. And that's what I strive to do with this, basically this how-to book. And I try to communicate it to the average person in easy and friendly terms that are not familiar with medical jargon and that kind of thing. So I wrote it for like Uncle Joe or my brother Dave, who aren't technically oriented. And that way they can understand, oh, wow, I get it. You know, and if I have to use a technical term, I'll explain it. Perfect example of that is like if I say endothelial. That's just the lining of the arteries. So when you hear that endothelial, oh, it's the lining of the arteries. Okay, so then you learn that.
Well, I wanted just to stay on that. And I think actually it's a nice segue as well. You know, in terms of simplicity, a lot of people that we know, right, ourselves, we go see doctors. And when it comes to our heart health, getting our labs done, you know, they start telling us about our LDLs and our HDLs and our triglycerides. And there's often a lot of confusion around that because what we've been taught and what we've been told is that, well, we're supposed to lower our LDLs, and that's the only thing we need to worry about. And for that reason, a plant-based diet, a high fiber, high grain, low fat diet is the way to go. Meanwhile, we know the truth that, you know, you're just stripping away all the cholesterol that your body needs and replacing it with plant sterols. And thus, yes, you have lower LDLs, but this is not necessarily an indicator of good health. It's not an indicator that you are at less risk of heart disease. And so, you know, talk to us a little bit more about that and what people should be looking for.
Yeah, well, first of all, in a nutshell, that's a bunch of BS. I'd use the whole word, but I don't know what your audience is like if they're going to hold it against me. But anyway, people with high cholesterol live the longest. People with low cholesterol die much earlier and usually have some form of cancer.
Can you say that again for our listeners? I just want you to repeat that loud and clear.
Yeah, we need to underscore that. Is that people with high cholesterol live the longest and people with low cholesterol die much earlier and usually have some form of cancer. Who has the lowest cholesterol levels? And I'm not pointing fingers, but it's vegans and vegetarians. So listen, I'm not anti-vegan. I mean, first of all, I applaud them because they're interested in their own health. They're taking the steps. They're probably getting to the gym and they're watching this and they've excluded much of the unholy trinity. So kudos to them, right? So that's fantastic. And I was a vegetarian until I saw this data. I couldn't unsee it after I saw it. And it's just so crazy because, you know, this whole LDL deal is just... it's just really false information because our bodies need cholesterol. Our bodies even make cholesterol on their own. And with the doctors, see, you have to measure a lot of a wide picture of your blood labs. A lot of doctors will just say, look at your LDL. Oh, your LDL is high. Here's your statin. What you want to do is you want to go full battery of tests because if you've got high HDL, which is the good cholesterol, which is extremely protective for your arteries and your whole body. Low triglycerides, which is basically a good measure of how many carbs and sugar you're eating. If that's down, Dr. Ovadia covered this on your show a while back. your waist circumference, your blood pressure, and your A1C. Those five are the what have been considered since the 80s. There was this researcher, Gerald Reven. Those are the metabolic markers, the five major metabolic markers. And you got to know where you all are in all of those, as well as your inflammation panel. I have all of those in there, and so does Dr. Ford with his chapter two. And the inflammation, that tells you if your artery's on fire and they're burning down, there are certain, I call them smoke detectors. You get these blood labs done, which are never ordered by your average doctor and many cardiologists either. And you have to get those done. They don't cost a lot of money. In fact, in the book, I show you how you can, if your doctor won't order them, how you can order them inexpensively online without needing a doctor's prescription. That way you can, you yourself can find out if you've got something lurking and ready to pounce.
I'm going to put a caveat on there. With the exception of New York State, here in the great state of New York, we are not allowed legally to order our own blood work. So for someone who's listening that lives here in New York with us, if you have a Connecticut address, I'm not suggesting anybody do this, but if you have another state, a family member, a PO box, somewhere else that you could use, that would be a way around that. And you'd be able to order your own blood work.
I don't know if you can tell by now, but I'm just a lower class street kid from Philly who learned early how to study well. I was fortunate that way. And, but you know, I'm back East guy like you. So yeah, no, that's amazing, you know, because you can order a lot of these. There's a place called Life Extension, lifeextension.com. And I don't know, you'd have to check on their website because they have a wonderful battery of tests. Most of them you can get there and see if they'll, see if they do that. They're in Florida. But I don't know, like you say, you can't order them online.
It's interesting. I actually tried going through, was it Dr. David Diamond's site, which is ordermylabs.com, I believe it was. And I did the whole workup, everything that I wanted, sent out my paperwork. I got an email back 1 week later. We're sorry, we are unable to process your transaction. State of New York does not allow us. So yeah, it's really, I mean, again, going back to what you said earlier, I mean, you follow the money and it makes sense why.
Well, so I use a service called Grassroots Labs, which we'll get Mike on. And we happen to have a very kind person in another state that has allowed us to use their address. And that was the only way for us to get around being able to order labs and have someone else interpret them for us. But I think it's absolutely criminal that you can't order your own blood work in the state that we live in.
That's amazing. You're blowing my mind now. I didn't know this. Wow. Well, everybody take Corey Beth's advice and do that. Have a friend, a family member, somebody you know to say, hey, these are the ones I want, you know, or go to requestatest.com. That's another one. And because usually you're always sent to a lab that's either a LabCorp or Quest Diagnostics, and they have thousands of locations around, right? And so there's going to be one near you. And the way it works is really simple. You probably know by now, you buy them, you buy the tests you want, you get an email, you print out a form, you take it to your local LabQuest or Quest Diagnostics, and they take your blood. And within a couple of few days, you get an email with your results. I mean, easy peasy, right? So no excuses for not getting your blood work. But sorry that you guys in New York are, man, it's just like, it's so diabolical. It's like, what are they doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're not allowed to know that. You're not allowed
right?
to know
that. Well, let's also, you know, I want to kind of stay on this topic of the, you know, the unholy trinity. And what I'd love to just get into now, just a little bit, is obviously a big part of you changing your health was to eliminate these things from your life. So today, like, what does your nutrition look like on a daily basis? Or let's not even just keep it to nutrition. What does your lifestyle look like? What about your exercise? I mean, we would love to hear it all.
I'm basically keto, but I stole this new term from Dr. Ken Burry. I told him a couple of weeks ago on his podcast. He's got this term called ketovore, which is a combination of keto and carnivore. And because I'm not full carnivore, I have an occasional asparagus or something like that, which is low lectins and low carbs. And I have another chapter in there, chapter 11, perilous plants and what they can do and how. Well, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, so I'm mostly, you know, what does he call it? The BBBE, beef, butter, bacon, egg, steak, you know, I'm like that. And as Dr. Ovedia told you guys, meat is the most nutritious food you can eat. It has, so let's face it, for millions and millions of years, our diet consisted of what we could catch, kill, and eat, nose to tail, right? Along with what we might pick off a tree or a vine, but only when it was in season. Remember, some berries, that kind of thing. And we never had any fruit juice and, you know, bread, pasta, pizza, all that. And it's just crazy. So, you know, that's basically my, I basically eat twice a day. I have a, you know, you stop counting calories, first of all. That's a bunch of BS too. You want to keep track of your carbohydrate load, right? And I eat two substantial meals every day. I do fasted exercise in the morning. My first meal is about 1 o'clock. So I get in about 18 hours a day of intermittent fasting. And the reason why that's so incredible, chapter nine, you guys, especially you two, you're going to, it's all about exercise and so forth. I mean, fasted exercise has been a secret to Hollywood trainers for a long time. I mean, that's how, what's the actor's name? Hugh Jackman. That's how he got completely ripped for the Wolverine. I mean, you see this guy? It's like, what? And he did the 16-hour fasting and all that kind of thing. So you don't start it all at once because you'll set yourself up for failure. You don't go, okay, I'm going low carb, I'm going keto. Little by little. What I say is, look, first start with, if you're eating, your typical person eating the SAD, standard American diet, SAD, you're eating three or four meals a day or three meals a day plus three or four snacks and all that. Start by eliminating snacks one by one. And the way to get from one meal to the next without breaking your fast and needing a snack, you load it up with healthy fats. You know, your salmon, your beef, your eggs, whatever it is. And that satiates you and makes you be able to last until your next meal. So you do that as the first thing. And then you can try the intermittent fasting, you know, start with 12 hours and gradually move it to 13 and 14. And I find, and for most people, it's eliminating breakfast is the easiest because a lot of people are not hungry in the morning anyway. And they're eating out of habit. And this whole nonsense of the breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Big Food invented that. Because they have lots of cereals, bagels, and Fruit Loops to sell you, right?
I believe, I'm not sure if I'm 100% correct on this. I believe Jimmy Dean sausages was the first to make that claim that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And they sold a lot of breakfast sausages off of that message.
Most of the breakfast foods these days are cereals and Pop-Tarts and all the kids that are, and the kids that are eating this stuff, is they're just obesity drivers. It's just pretty astounding how most people just don't have this education. And that's why I tried to make it a well-rounded book to give them the background and how to get metabolically healthy again and get that waistline that you had back when you were 19 or whatever. And, you know, they even had studies on this fasted exercise. You would be interested in this in the, and I have this in chapter nine too, where they have two groups. One group does fed exercise and the other one does fasted exercise, right? One ate breakfast, the other one didn't. And they followed over a number of months and so forth. And they found that those who did the fasted exercise lost 300% more fat mass than the fed group, the one that ate breakfast. And that's huge, 300%. So if you have somebody that wants to lose a lot of weight fast, have them do fasted exercise. I mean, you know, like I said, take it easy because you don't want to start everything at once because you'll wind up failing. And then you'll go, oh, yeah, I tried that keto intermittent fasting stuff, but it doesn't work. What did you do exactly? You did it wrong. So,
and that's, you know, the point that we always want to drive home to people is that all of these things that we're discussing, this is all about lifestyle changes. This is all about lifestyle management. It's not about a particular diet. And even though, you know, just like you, we'll throw terms around. People ask us, what are we? We're predominantly carnivore or carnivore-ish. You know, do we allow some things here and there? Yeah, we absolutely do, right? We're human and we're not going to be dogmatic about our approach. That said, it's really troubling when people paint themselves into this corner of saying, I am this, or I follow that diet. Whereas ultimately what we should be striving to do is determine what is the way in which I can eat and live my lifestyle that provides for good health, that allows me to just walk around leaner with more energy, without trying, without having to feel like I'm you know, boxing myself into this very restrictive way of eating every single day. And it's a struggle. And I think that's why for us personally, you know, carnivore, eating carnivore-ish has been so easy. It's like, I love steak. I can't eat enough ribeyes. You know, I mean, our only problem is staying stocked up on them, because I would eat that for every single meal for the rest of my life and be quite happy. And I know that eating that way allows me to walk around feeling like I have a ton of energy, looking the way that I want to look. My strength levels are still very high. You know, my muscularity at almost 47 is just as good as it was like 10 years ago and 5 years before that. So I think that it's important that we fall upon what works for us. And if that means that we're going to, you know, eat some vegetables along with a mostly meat diet, and we're going to follow this ketovore thing, hey, great. Like, do that, you know?
Well, and like you, I did vegetarian for 2 full years. And thinking, you know, then like that I would be eating mostly red meat, I would never believe it in a million years, because green fruit juice smoothies are healthy and colorful bowls of vegetables are healthy. And if you want to be healthy, like, this is the nutrition path that you have to follow. So this field that we're in, it's quite an unpopular one, I will say that. But I will say, a book like the one you've wrote is certainly not going to be recommended by medical fields, medical doctors, big pharma, big medicine, because they have nothing to profit from it. And that's why I'm so grateful you're here, for us to promote a book like this, to get into the hands of good people so that they can take control of their health.
Well, there are, thank you for saying that. And there are many doctors these days that are coming around, like your Dr. Philip Avedia you had on, Ken Berry, he had me on. And it's very, this kind of a diet, a keto diet, is these meat bodies that we push around are evolutionarily developed to eat this way for millions of years. And we've just changed it in the last 100 years or so with the introduction of this unholy trinity. And he said, yeah, you know, if somebody said to me, hey, because he has a farm now, right? He said, hey, Dr. Ken, if you, those 70 sheep you have in the pasture there, you shouldn't let them eat grains and grass, because we come up with this new formula in the factory and we got a patent on it, right? And you should be feeding that. Anybody would say, what? Are you crazy? And these bodies that we've been eating or that we've had for millions of years are used to eating in this way. It's the Johnny-come-lately foods that are from, you know, these food manufacturers that are destroying our health and our wellness. And so it's not anything new. That's why I put it all in. And more, that's why I was able to get some of these, you know, amazing endorsements for the book. I'm so flattered. And I mean, I have the, and they're all, you know, New York Times bestselling authors who are also physicians. I even have the winner of the Nobel Prize in Medicine for his discovery of nitric oxide. I mean, I'm like, whoa, I really lucked out there. I got some pretty big names, and you'll see them.
I'm going to interrupt though for a second. I think one of the main reasons though, why you've gotten the endorsements that you've gotten also, is because your book is so well cited, right? There's over 1,200 citations in this book. So this is my opinion. This is what I went out and tried, and this is my result. This is not anecdotal. I mean, sure, there's anecdotal evidence that all of that what you're saying absolutely works. But the point being is that it is well researched. It's not just a random, hey, this is an opinion piece, or this is another fad. It is really like piecing together the science and the research. And I mean, that's my greatest appreciation. So I just want to provide you that.
Mike, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I tell the reader in the beginning of the book, I know you might be thinking, you know, without formal university credentials in medicine, organic chemistry, why the hell should I trust you? And I tell them, don't. None of this is my opinion. Just think of me as a friendly relay point of the best of what 21st century modern science has to offer for your health and longevity. Trust that and fix yourself. I did. You can too. None of this is my opinion. Most books out there have, if they have any at all, they have 200 or 300 scientific citations. Mine has 1,227, because I knew I had to have that backup. It's a pain in the ass, a lot of work to do, I'm telling you, because you got to provide the names of the authors and the, you know, the name of the study, where it was published, this and that. And there were so many, we couldn't even fit them in the book. How to put them or throw them up on the website. There's a thing on the website, danieltrevor.com. It says it references, and you can download them all there. The convenient thing about that is that I provide links where you can just click the link and you can go right to the source data and read it for yourself if you want to take a dive into a certain area. So
beautiful.
Thank you for bringing that up, because again, none of it's my Daniel's opinion. It's just all, you know, the science, the proven correct science from RCTs, you know, randomized controlled trials, meta-analyses. And, you know, I avoided anything that had funding from big food, big pharma, big medicine, that kind of thing. And so you can trust the science in this case, at least.
Yes, I love that.
Well, Daniel, this has been an absolute pleasure. We are so grateful for you for being here today and for just providing such like wealth of knowledge and, you know, taking the time to put this book together and all those citations and really presenting just such a compelling case for people to remove this unholy trinity from their nutrition. And I think that, you know, this message today, it's going to reach a lot of people, and we're just blessed to have you with us.
So, well, we want to encourage our listener, hop on over to his website, danieltrevor.com, get the free preview of the book, and definitely get your copy of Unholy Trinity, How Carbs, Sugar, and Oils Make Us Fat, Sick, and Addicted, and How to Escape Their Grip.
Yes, I'm down with that.
Thank you so much.
Hey guys, thanks a lot, and keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, muscle is the organ of longevity, and you guys are into that. Chapter 9, you can find out all that stuff. And even what's the best exercise for people over 40. Got some amazing data there you're going to love. So thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I hope my rough around the edges Philly kid style is, you know, was okay.
We love it.
As New Yorkers, it works for us.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Oh, sugar.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.